Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. MECU.com or log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner. This show really was inspired by many things. One is Dr. Lester Spence, who joins us here at least every month. He's assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, author of See Into the Darkness, The Limits.
Stare, man. Stare.
Can't you see in the darkness? You can't
see too? Oh, man.
You just want to stare?
Stare.
Fine.
Rock him. Rock him.
Stare into the darkness, The Limits of Hip Hop.
You're killing me.
And Black Pollock. Sorry, brother. One of the things we're talking about is the power of hip hop, the power of youth culture. The power to build movements and change things. In this city, the Algebra Project, which we'll talk about, one of the members of the project is in the studio with us, began a protest to stop the building of the youth jail. The youth jail was taken out of the governor's budget. Doesn't mean the struggle is over, but it pushed it back. And folks from Occupy came in. Also, this began years back when two members of the Algebra Project were arrested and charged as adults, mm-hmm. which led to a whole movement to deal with our prison, our school-to-prison pipeline, and charging young people as adults. So we have with us here Nicole Cheatham, who is youth organizer with the Baltimore Algebra Project and now a student at Baltimore City Community College. Good to mm-hmm. have you in the studio again.
Yes, I love being here.
And Umar Farouk is with us by phone. He's a former Baltimore activist and a journalist, and is now in New York interning at Nation Magazine and wrote a blog about the Algebra Project. And Umar, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
How you doing?
All right, man. And Delegate Jill Carter is with us, Maryland State Delegate from Baltimore District 41, who has been one on the forefront in the state legislature battling the building of this jail. And Jill, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you.
Number is 410-319-8888. Let's just go backwards for a second. First, let's talk to the movement itself. And then talk to and let then Umar jump in and talk about his piece that he wrote, and then leap into this the power of this, what's happened here. Tell the story from your perspective.
Well, for me, it was a personal connection. The father of my daughter was one of the two youth arrested, which got the Algebra Project involved
with this whole movement.
Yeah,
wow.
He was one of the people arrested with the Occupy movement the day of the occupation at the jail site. So I've been very personally connected to this issue as a whole. I actually got involved with it all. Like you said, I was with a group, which is a sister group of the Baltimore Urban Debate League called the Hip Hop Congress. So where we took, you know, young people who were interested in hip hop and basically taught them about politics and how they could use their interest in hip hop and how they use their words to better themselves and their communities. So from that, of course, I branched off into working with the Algebra Project. And just once the incident had happened with my boyfriend, it touched me in a deep way, and it really got us everyone, not just myself, involved with it. So the main thing that caught everyone off guard was the fact that he was charged as an adult, as you said. So one, a lot of people didn't even know that could happen. So it was like, they're charging him as an adult. Who said that's okay? He's 16 years old. Yeah. Why is that even possible? So once that happened and a lot of people discovered that this policy was in place, it just took, we took all our forces and battled against it. Like you said, this year we've got the line item taken out of the budget so that the youth prison won't be built in fiscal year 2013. Also, we started out October 2010. We had Youth Justice Sunday where a bunch of different organizations came out. They cut the lock on the gate. And from that, we moved policy along and we got the budget. We got the jail pushed back for another year. So then now this is our second time getting it pushed for a year, whereas though the jail cannot be built. So we're just continuing to work to fight to make sure that the automatic prosecution of youth charges adults is eliminated, as well as the jail, no need for it to be built.
And Umar, talk about, what you wrote about and what, for you, in your perspective, having lived here and now working in New York at The Nation, the power of the Algebra Project and what this has meant. And in some senses, I think its uniqueness when you look at other cities.
Yeah, definitely. I think, well, first of all, what caught my attention, I was involved as an activist in Baltimore in my time there. And then here at the national level, people were interested because it's a success story. At least we hope, we think it's going to be definitely a success story that hits on a couple of different issues. You know, it hits on the school funding issue. It hits on the adult, adult incarceration of youth. It hits on that issue. And, you know, it also hits on sort of the criticism that people like to throw at the Occupy movement, that it's not doing anything tangible in communities. And this is just a great example of, like, youth and Occupy activists and faith groups and all these people coming together and sort of winning a real victory, like a real victory in a city like Baltimore.
And Delegate Carter, the struggle to not build a youth jail in Maryland in Baltimore is not over, is it?
Well, I certainly don't think so. I mean, I think it's delayed for a while. There's definitely a plan on the part of the governor and his administration to make a smaller jail, and I fear that they think that is somehow giving the people what they want is somehow acceptable. But it is going from a jail that was estimated to be $104 million to a jail that's estimated to be about $80 million. And so I think there's delay, but it's definitely not over, which is why I said back in 2010, and I say now, that protest is important, and it's important to raise awareness, and it's important that the governor and legislators know that people en masse and across cultural and economic and race lines have an opinion. But I think that without legislation, without an in-writing commitment, we can't depend on the jail not being built. And I'll tell you that the governor still plans to build the jail. He specifically said this in a recent meeting, that he's fully committed to building the jail. So I think that definitely the battle isn't over, but I think that what we have to do is work toward getting a moratorium passed saying that the jail cannot and will not be built.
We're going to touch on each one of these subjects. And Lester.
Yeah. So one of the things this movement – so Umar mentioned that this kind of shows that that this is an example of an Occupy with teeth to a certain extent. That's my language, not his necessarily. But what it also shows is it kind of puts to rest the idea that Occupy itself is this predominantly white thing that's not necessarily concerned – with or does not necessarily work well with people who are not white, who come from different class backgrounds, right? Because what we're talking about here is an effort that was driven predominantly by black youth, and then also had significant involvement by Occupy Baltimore members, some of whom were themselves teachers. Like I can think about Iris, for example.
Iris, right?
Iris is a white progressive Baltimore public school teacher. So she works with black kids every day, right? So that's one thing. And then the other thing is to reiterate what Delegate Carter said, movements are formed not just through specific initiatives. They're formed by developing a culture of consistent struggle, right? Mm-hmm. There is no victory we're going to have without consistent struggle. And this type of thing can not only help build that culture among the kids in the Baltimore Algebra Project. I took my children to the Occupy youth event. And that was the first political event I'd taken them to. And that event radicalized my youngest daughter, whom Iris incidentally gave her glasses to hold, right?
She was arrested, you mean?
When she was arrested, she talked to my youngest daughter, Niara. She said, "Niara, I think I'm about to go to jail. I need you to hold these glasses for me." And my daughter, even though I'm her father, my daughter never understood until that moment the idea of going to jail for a political purpose. She never seen that before, right? That's how you build a culture of struggle longitudinally. That is over time, where you've got adults, kids, and then basically babies who get a sense of what that struggle is supposed to be about.
Let me get some callers in here, and I'm going to come back to the various questions and issues all four of you raised, as well as some of the emails that have come in. And 410-319-8888 is the number here. And steinershow@gmail.com is the number is where you write to hit the our email account. You can also go to the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page and write your comments there. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, good evening, Mark. How you doing, Delegate Carter?
Oh, hi.
Well, welcome.
Hi, Aaron.
Well, you know, listening about the youth jail, I would have to agree with Delegate Carter that this is not a won battle yet, because she's still fighting it in the legislature, and the folk like Reverend Heber Brown, among others, who worked long and hard on this issue, along with Delegate Carter. In fact, Delegate Carter was among the very first who made it raised in public. And I think the folks that really need to get credit for the work they've done with this issue, and not just a select few. And I also believe that we can't rest on our laurels that this fight is over, but this is a fight that's ongoing, and we can't leave the impression that it's over. And also, I'd like to salute Delegate Carter on the documentary on her father, Walter P. Carter, which I was thrilled to hear about this week. And I understand it was a well-attended and grand documentary.
Thank you. You know, if you don't mind, I want to comment on that. I really appreciate you bringing it up, Aaron, because when I was listening to Dr. Spence talking about his experience with his daughter, I actually was reminded that I did grow up with protests, as Steiner well knows. And, you know, the struggle that I hear talking about with Occupy, you know, is all familiar to me, because from birth until my father died when I was seven, pickets and protests and, you know, movements for change were a daily part of my life. And then finally, I know I don't want to get off of topic, but I think it's very significant that this documentary about Walter Carter called him the Martin Luther King of Maryland. But also that his last words in his final speech were, "I will commit the rest of my life to making the city a fit place where our children can live." And so the legacy continues and the struggle continues, and trying to force the establishment to implement alternatives, reasonable and creative and workable and successful and productive alternatives to incarceration of youth, is that current mission. And finally, I will just end this part of what I have to say with only 5% of children that are initially charged as adults wind up being convicted as adults.
Right.
So we talk about where they will be housed from the time they are, in many cases, wrongly arrested and charged as adults, held prior to trial, often waved back into the juvenile system and the like, and you know the story. Some of your listeners may not, but I'm sure you do, Mark, and others on the panel. It's illogical to actually build the youth jail, because there are too many alternatives, and we're talking about a very small population in the final analysis.
And it is an issue that we have tackled a lot on this program, because, I mean, the absurdity of charging young people as adults. If you need a maximum security prison for the few juveniles who commit those crimes, well, then we have one downtown. We can transfer into that, and young people there can be in other places in the community where they can be rehabilitated and brought back to society, which is part of what this struggle is all about. And I did know Joe Carter, your dad, real well, and he was just an amazing human being who was an inspiration to everybody who ever worked with him. 410-319-8888. Darren, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening.
Hi, Darren.
Would like to say this, of course. I want to thank Delegate Jill Carter for bringing a dose of reality to, sometimes, unfortunately, what sounds more like reality radio than real radio. I, too, was blessed to have my daughter, who was a member of the Algebra Project, Adriana, who was out there working with the young people. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm curious to ask those members, in terms of looking at their successes, for those that are coming late now, saying that they've stopped the jail from being built. I remember the Algebra Project called for the arrest of Nancy Grasmick.
Mm-hmm.
That never happened. I remember the Algebra Project called for the removal of Bonnie Copeland. Never happened. I remember a young man by the name of Zach Halbach, who was shot and killed, member of the Algebra Project, his case still remains open. And as regards to the death of Zach Hallback, there was another Zach that was killed, Zach Sowers, received a lot of attention, but not the life of Zach Hallback. And that family still cries out for justice.
True.
But I'm curious, when we talk about this issue of occupying, why we're not saying, let's take the Occupy movement to Annapolis and occupy Annapolis and force this governor and the legislators to sign onto a moratorium, all of them, that there will be no youth jail built in Baltimore City and that money could be better used elsewhere in terms of, again, putting it into alternative programs in the city of Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hang up.
Darren, thanks so much. I'm glad you are tuning into Real Radio.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, first Nicole. And foremost, yet again, I'm personally connected. You're naming all these names. My brother Xavier was actually standing right next to Zach when he got shot. So it just touched me when he said that. But overall, I totally agree. The Algebra Project is actually part of an alliance, as I've stated before when I was on this show, that is made up of 30 organizations that have obviously different venues about going to stop this jail as a whole. Of course, Jill Carter has been an ally, like she said, since 2010 when we was out there screaming in front of the proposed new youth jail site, as well as, you know, we have different allies within Annapolis. So since we have allies in Annapolis, we don't necessarily think that the approach to occupy Annapolis, knowing that we have so many allies at our side now, would necessarily be the best approach. So we know we have our political venues as well as our grassroots organizing that we're doing at the same time. So, of course, like I said, we're definitely taking different venues as to solve this issue as a whole, because, like you said, it's not just about the jail necessarily. It's about the, I guess, the fact that they're violating the civil rights of these young people by charging them as adults.
So, Jill, what would happen if they occupied Annapolis? What do you think would happen if that actually occurred?
I actually think that's a brilliant idea. And I'll say that, you know, I too was once politically naive, but then I spent 9 years here in Annapolis. And so we don't really know for sure who our allies are until they vote yes or no. Now, I understand that money is not in the budget this year, but it will be, it's planned to be in the budget next year. So this year, once again, I do have another bill calling for a moratorium, because only that commitment really ensures that it won't be done and that the money can be redirected to school construction, much needed, and how the absurdity of building a youth jail when there have been no new schools built in Baltimore in such a very long time.
I'd like to make I'll make two comments. The first is that there's a different type of struggle and movement that you use to actually either put legislation in place or remove legislation than you'd use in dealing with individuals, right? So I'd actually, to the extent we'd articulate, though Darren was kind of articulating those earlier events as kind of losses or failures, I wouldn't place them in the same category. One. Two is that you can't predict the outcomes or the way that even quote unquote losses help future victories. So I wouldn't articulate them in losses for that reason. But the third is that I'm getting kind of technically I'm middle aged, but as soon as I hear somebody say out loud, "Why don't you do this?" I say, "Okay, well that's an excellent idea. Why don't you do it?" Right. So Darren, if you're listening, I think Occupy Annapolis is a hell of an idea. When you do it, put something on email, and, you know, if I can get a ride, I'll be there.
410-319-8888 is the number here. In the 5 minutes or so that we have before we go to break, I want to come back to some of the original things we talked about, and I'm curious, as you look around Baltimore and look around the nation, what does this say about what organizing means? What does it say about the kind of, you know, we look at Occupy movements around the country and what people think they mean. There's all kinds of debates going on about what they're supposed to be and not supposed to be at the moment. But to me, even more important than that, is looking at what this youth movement in Baltimore that erupted on its own through the Algebra Project, organizing its peers, its students from around the city, what that says about the potential power of this hip-hop culture, this hip-hop generation, what it brings to the table that is never allowed at the table, and what you think all that means. And Umar, take it from what you saw in Baltimore and take it around the nation for us for a moment. And let's start this part of our conversation. I want to hear what our listeners think at 410-319-8888 about what our young people are doing. Umar?
Well, I think the Baltimore Housing Project is, you know, exemplary in that. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's produced hundreds and hundreds of youth activists over the last few years. Hello?
We're listening to you, Mark.
You know, there's a whole list of actions that they've done that I could rattle through the last few years. Some of them have been successful, some of them haven't been successful, but they've definitely changed the conversation in Baltimore. And as an activist, I wasn't, you know, necessarily part of the Algebra Project, but I can tell you that other activist groups in Baltimore look up to the Baltimore Algebra Project as an amazing example of what really dedicated young people can do when they're faced with problems that, you know, society is, like, basically screwing them over in schools, on the streets, when they want to get a job. And it's sort of an amazing example. I don't even know of any other example in the country where sort of that age group has stood up and done so much for themselves for so long. So I mean, it's just an amazing and inspiring example, and I hope they keep going. And also, like, to the idea of whether or not this is a victory, whether or not this jail is stopped or not, it may be, you know, technically not stopped for now, but for the last few years, people have been successfully able to postpone the construction of this jail. And people have been successfully able to reduce the size and the scope of this jail and to shift the conversation to the point where, you know, the mainstream media in Baltimore and nationally is looking at this issue and seeing that this is just a stupid idea. There's op-ed after op-ed in newspapers in Baltimore saying that this is a stupid idea, that the governor is doing something really stupid. When you win a campaign, you're not going to get a press release from the governor saying, okay, we give up Algebra Project. We're sorry, we're not going to do this. You're going to get small victories, and they're going to be like this. And it doesn't mean you stop fighting, but I think you should stop and sort of acknowledge that you have some power.
You have to claim that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Every time you get one, you have to claim it.
So hold that thought, and we'll come back to that, and talk about what is building in Baltimore. We want to get to that, and what. Because I think we'll talk also about, you said you have to claim it. We'll also talk about this movement that was created by the Algebra Project represents a great deal more than the hundreds of students mm-hmm. who may have been demonstrating at any given moment and who they touch. So we'll come back to all that. But on the way to the break, I have to remind you one thing here, that support for WEAA is made possible by The Book Thing, 3001 Vineyard Lane in Baltimore. The Book Thing accepts donated books and dispenses them at no charge. The Book Thing has over 200,000 books in stock and gives away almost 20,000 books each week. Open Saturday and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. More information at bookthing.org or 410-662-5631. We'll be right back. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And I want to say, as we jump back into a conversation about the Algebra Project, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. If you are a first or second time home buyer in the city of Baltimore, there are many places available for you. You can call 1-800-638-7781, the Maryland Mortgage Program, 1-800-638-7781. And Dr. Lester Spence is here in the house, and he's here every month, assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. Stare in the Darkness, Limits of Hip-Hop and Political Power is his latest book. He's in the middle of another one now. And we're also joined by Nicole Cheatham, youth organizer for the Baltimore Algebra Project, student of Baltimore City Community College, Umar Farouk, a former Baltimore activist and journalist, now in New York interning at The Nation magazine, wrote a blog about the Algebra Project. And, of course, Delegate Jill Carter, Maryland State Delegate from Baltimore here in District 41, 410-319-8888. Let's tackle some of these things. I'm curious how you all felt it. And let me start with Nicole and ask Delegate Carter this question about the power of this movement. And I said earlier, as we went to break, that it was it may have at any given time had hundreds of students out in the street, mm-hmm. right, from the Baltimore Asher Project and those you organized to come out there. Mm-hmm. But the power went beyond the several hundred, mm-hmm. touching communities, touching people, because the power was felt beyond this, just you.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things...
Can we get a mic turned up? Keep it up, please.
One of the things that we try to make people aware of on a daily basis, whenever we meet new people or whatever the case may be, is that this issue not only affects us, right? So, like, my daughter is 2 years old. So even though she's 2 years old, if they build this new proposed youth jail, she would be the one locked up in it and not me, right? So, and another thing that we like to touch on is, like, also that it just doesn't affect us young people. It affects the parents, because when your child goes to jail, that means, you know, they may, you know, need money for commissary. You're going to have to take time out of your busy schedule to go visit them and all of these different things. Whereas in if the state invested in our young people like they should, then you won't have to worry about taking a 3-hour drive like currently, like most parents do currently, out to wherever. And since they're like, if your child was locked up in Montgomery County and they're sent to this new juvenile jail in Baltimore City, then you're going to have to drive from Montgomery County to Baltimore City to go see your child. So it not only affects the young people, but affects everyone as a whole, because it's sending the message to our young people that we'll rather invest in jails than in a positive future for you, with you being the future.
And clearly, Jill Carter, on a political front, the power of those hundreds of students was felt beyond just them, because it backed the government up for a while. They had to stop what they were doing.
Well, one thing that I've got to credit the Algebra Project for, and some of the others, is the fact that they didn't just protest, you know, in Baltimore, but they did come and sit in at the legislative hearing or the briefing even this year recently. That makes a difference, because, again, I don't want to burst anyone's bubble in terms of their you know idealism. However, being in the room when legislators are hearing bills and making votes does make a difference, because you know your delegate or your senator may take a different and make a different vote if you're sitting there watching them. It makes a difference. Again, I've said that the governor has stated emphatically that he's still committed to building the jail. And what message that sends to me is that the chair of appropriations is going to likely do what the governor wants ultimately, because that's how it works around here. But I think only through, it takes everything. It takes the struggle in the street, but then it also takes the legislative effort. And Mark, you asked before in terms of building on these youth movements and this generation and the power they have. I would say that the power they have is what they are doing now, which is learning to organize. But the real power they have is when they have the power of the vote and they use it to make a real difference. Because what matters here, and why you see so much momentum, and it's when the state is suffering in so many ways now, for example, with marriage equality this session, is because that is a population that votes. Okay, and so the fact that if all of the advocates for marriage equality or same-sex marriage were a whole bunch of non-voters, trust me, this would not be a legislative priority this year. So I would just say that what they can do is continue to force the issue of the importance of voting. And, of course, the other layer, there are two things that speak to legislators, voters and money. And so, you know, if you don't have the money, if you're not going to finance the campaign, that's the only alternative you really have.
Well,
let's just spend.
What I do is I'd push you a bit, right? I think we run into trouble when we articulate certain forms of political behavior as being real, particularly when we're talking about the vote, and other forms of political behavior being not, right? What I would say is that legislation is important, and there are a wide range of ways to use traditional and non-traditional means to get that legislation passed or not passed. right? So, for example, you can reframe an issue in the media using the stuff that you already do, whether it's hip hop or public performance or, you know, radical theater, et cetera, and not cast a vote, a single vote, and force a legislator to vote the way you want them to, because the issue that they used to support has now been rendered moot through the media. Right. So I wouldn't necessarily I understand where you're going, Delegate Carter, but I wouldn't, particularly in this time, I think that we should urge people to focus on legislation, but we should urge people to become well versed in a wide range of political tactics and strategies.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying that they did the right thing by coming to Annapolis, by learning and practicing legislative advocacy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By no means do I agree that not having any influence where the decisions are made. I don't agree with that. I think you must appear where the decisions are being made.
Oh, Delegate Carter, I was just saying what you did was you made a distinction. You said, well, the real power is the vote. Well, no, the power is power, right? That voting is an important endeavor.
A population that doesn't vote has extraordinarily diminished power, which is exactly the reason that you've seen no schools being built for a long time, because you're talking about a group of people that don't vote, children.
No, what it is people aren't participating politically. That's different than not vote. If not voting is related, but it's not.
One at a time. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's also why we still have the devastation of lead poisoning of children in Baltimore. Again, when you have a population that doesn't vote and doesn't have money, they do not have legislative priority. That is the reality of this world and of the state of Maryland.
Let's go back to the phones. Does you want to jump?
You know what? Umar wanted to jump in.
Go ahead, Umar.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think, practically speaking, Baltimore kids can't, or Baltimore youth can't vote for a few more years for at least city level elections and gubernatorial elections. So that's one practical issue. And I think that I sort of see where people are going with voting and being involved in the political process being really important. They did try, though. There were, I think, at least two candidates associated with the Algebra Project that ran in the city council elections this time.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
they lost, and you could say maybe they lost because they didn't knock on enough doors, or they weren't very politically savvy or something. But, you know, they did sort of try, and maybe next election there'll be a lot more people engaged in the political process. But I don't really dismiss the idea of being able to change things between elections. Just from following Baltimore politics about a couple of different issues, like the development issue in Baltimore, I think there's a real change in the way that the city council is treating development.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole, there's almost a crusade against the Hopkins Development Project in East Baltimore now that wasn't there 1 or 2 years ago. And it's not being led, by new council people. It's being led by incumbent council people who've been reelected but who have so much political pressure that they see it as politically advantageous to sort of get behind this issue. So I think there's a lot of different tools at people's disposal to sort of deal with the issue. The other thing I like to say is that youth need to realize, people like my age need to realize that if we don't solve the problems of our system like today, like 10 years from now, we're going to be the ones running the system. Like, we can't rely on other people to run the system anymore, so we need to sort of build up to that as we go forward.
Let's open the phones here. There's a lot of people mm-hmm. calling in, getting this conversation. 410-319-8888. Talking about the power of the youth movement, the hip-hop youthful movement in the city, of students around the Osborne Project and other places that have stymied the system as far right up to this moment, what that power means and how it grows and how it builds and what's the power, which we'll get to in a moment, as I think that Lester said earlier, how they use their words. The power of the words. 410-319-8888. Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
How are you guys doing?
Well.
Good. Well, I know I preach this every time I call, but it works, it works, it works, it works. I think there's great power not only in our vote, but power with these cell phones that we have. I mean, because when you think about it, a lot of people, unfortunately, have convictions in Baltimore, and so they can't really vote. And then the other half are just like, I gave up hope. I ain't voting because it doesn't matter. But, I mean, we could collectively, or just one person, hell, I'll even do it. Oh, I didn't mean to say that word, but I'll do it. I mean, we can take a day or 2 days where just everyone kind of comes together and calls. And if you clog up those in office that are not cooperating or listening to us actively, if you clog up their phone line, their fax line, and their email, I think they'll listen then. Or at least, you know, say, hey, okay, we'll listen for a couple seconds. Can you stop calling? Because we did it back where I'm from, and because the governor wanted to line item veto something that, you know, took out a lot of funding out of our arts program. And so we took 2 days and we called, and by the end of the day, they're like, okay, just quit calling. Just please quit calling. So I think that on top of everything else, I mean, trust me, if the governor can't get a phone call out, I think that'll get his attention. Mm-hmm. So that's just my two cents. But if anyone wants to join on, you can. Can I say that they can find me on Facebook or no?
You can. Yes, you can.
Okay. Well, they can find me. I'm not going to give my whole name, but if you just go Free Things to Do in Baltimore, you can find me right on there.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Andrea.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. 410-319-8888.
We've definitely been calling the governor.
Yes. What did you say?
We've definitely been calling the governor. On January 24th, when we went to Annapolis, the whole bus full of young people calling the governor back to back, back to back, back to back for 2 hours.
That's a good thing. That's one of the things that has to be done. 410-319-8888. Willie, you're on the air.
Yes. Jill, I say hi to you. This is Willie, friend of Darren's. Anyway, Jill was talking some practical things, you know, things that make common sense, like it takes money to get your message out. It also takes a vote to get it, you know, to get you elected. So I don't know what this other guy is talking about. You know, you have to reframe this and put it in the media. And I mean, who has control over the media but people that own the media? So what was he talking about?
Well, he's right here. Can I ask the question? Lester Spence?
Nothing. I'm an idiot. So what I was saying was that historically speaking, are you going to let me finish? You going to let me finish? Historically speaking, we've been able to get a lot accomplished through means including but not limited to the vote. So what I was and including but not limited to money. So what I was suggesting was, to the extent we need to think about what to do moving forward, I wasn't saying don't vote. What I was saying is we shouldn't make distinctions between what's real political behavior and what's not real political behavior. Right. If for no other reason than looking at this school to prison pipeline, there is a large population of people who would basically be meaningless because they can't cast a vote. Right. Because they don't have the money. But so what we have to do is extend our political imagination to figure out, how do we use people where they are to get to what we need? And instead of saying, and this is not what Delegate Carter was saying, but instead of saying, well, listen, you do real stuff and then other people don't.
Well, the way you use your political imagination is take some money and give it to a politician that has your interests at heart. And then go vote for him, and go out and work for him, and try to get him put in office.
And
that's all Jill is saying. So I don't know where you're coming. Maybe you're trying to sound intelligent. Maybe you know this intellectual.
We don't want to kind of degenerate into like personal attacks between each other. That doesn't help on either side of our discussion. Jill, you want to come in there?
If I could, unfortunately, Dr. Spence, I don't know, my cell phone or something, I'm using a cell phone, and much of what you said I couldn't hear. Yeah. But at any rate, I don't want to waste any time disagreeing, because everybody that's here is on the same page in terms of what
that's right.
But the other thing is that I totally think that we are disagreeing. I am simply saying that this organization and this momentum built by the youth of the Algebra Project and others is critical. But I thought Mark was saying, what can happen to even expand this, to make them be a more powerful force in the immediate future and the long-range future? And I'm thinking to use the skills they've developed now in organizing to be politically intelligent, as they have been, in coming to Annapolis and engaging not only in public protest, but in legislative advocacy. But finally, the final thing that must happen is they must be a become a voting population. Because if they are not, and it's the reality is, as I was saying before, if you're not a voting population, you frankly count very little. Everyone else counts more. All the people that vote for elected officials count more than the people that don't vote for them, because if it weren't for the people that vote for them, they wouldn't be able to be in office. Was that?
Let me go back to the phones here. And Willie, thanks for your call. Let's go to Mike in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, folks. I got to say something. I know I'm talking here to a relative of Walter B. Carter, and I'm honored.
Thank you.
My son played basketball at the Walter P. Carter Rec Center, you know, off of, what is it, Old York Road? And
St. George's.
Huh?
It's off of St. George's is the street.
Yep, St. Yeah, George's.
Off of Old York, well, that's how we forget that.
So anyway, the point is?
Anyway, but I want to commend Professor or Dr. Spence. You take your choice, man. I'll call you anything you want tonight. for a point he made, power is power. If you think power is only voting for Republicans and Democrats, then you haven't been paying attention to history. We've been voting for them a long time, and we got more poverty and more people going to prison. And the big debate, where will they go to prison, or how old will they be when you put them in prison? We have to expand our notion of power beyond the supposed practicality of the Republicans and the Democrats control the world. We have to control them. We have to go beyond them and have a new vision of what's powerful and what's possible.
Yeah. Mike, thanks for your call. This is interesting. This is this has always been an interesting dynamic, Nicole. I think that my guess is that inside the Algebra Project, this is a debate you have a lot with your peers, with your fellow comrades inside your organization.
Yes.
You know, because I'm curious to see what you say about this, because you look at history, and the vote is important. Voting for legislation is important. The Civil Rights Act of 64 and many other things I can mention. But the reason those things happened was a push from the outside, because there weren't that many black folks in the U.S. Congress at the time those things were happening. And so that happened all through history, whether it was the Equal Rights Amendment for women have the right to vote in America, or the Civil Rights Movement in the 60s. These movements from the street up that pushed to get things to change. And then on the other hand, you wouldn't have the Environmental Protection Act and the Civil Rights Act if people weren't voting in Congress, people weren't pushed to vote for those things. The same thing in the state of Maryland. So talk a bit about how that struggle works itself out between those two tendencies inside the Algebra Project.
Well, the Algebra Project has always been a grassroots movement type of organization. One, because most of our people who work for us can't vote, so we don't really have any other option. But also, we've learned as we've grown as an organization that, yes, at some point in time, you must take the venue of going towards politics, right? So one of the main things that myself personally that I like to push for is that anytime, and this is where Jill Carter being our ally comes in, and this is why she's wonderful, is that anytime we have any type of campaign, whether it's the National Student Bill of Rights, whether it's the school to prison pipeline, or even a food campaign, which is like super local.
Yeah. Which is one of your new projects.
Yeah. Getting quality foods in Baltimore City schools. But no matter what level you're taking, you need allies on a political side, regardless of whether, like I said, whether you're on a local level, whether you're on a national level. You need those politicians on your side, especially when you deal with issues that deal with, like, the prison industrial complex, that where these young people going to jail is basically a business and people can profit off of it. So with that being the case, you need the grassroots organizing as well as the politics both to be involved, especially dealing with something as serious as privatizing prisons and that whole industrial complex that happens. So for myself personally, though, I've never been a policy person. I'm grassroots organizing. If the people say no, then it should be no. That's the type of person I am.
And good at it, too. 410-319-8888. CJ, you're on the air from Owings Mills.
How you doing? I wanted to respond. It was a few callers ago. I guess the guy was kind of blasting some of the, I guess from his point of view, he saw a lot of the approach of even though obviously kids under a certain age cannot vote, that they can still have a change, they can make an impact. I guess he saw that as, you know, maybe ineffective. And with what you were saying, Mr. Steiner, about the different movements, is very on point. If anything, not even just kids, but people who are up on their technology and with the times understand that we have a stronger access to media and influence than ever before, with Twitter, Facebook, and blasting things, being able, I'm sure, at least with the government, they have Twitter accounts, they have email addresses, they have Facebook. There's so many outlets and points of, for lack of a better word, attack, that it actually gives the youth more power, as opposed to, okay, I need to go meet a delegate and go through all that, you know, process. Well, how about I speak to you directly by sending you a tweet, or like one lady was saying earlier, of course with the phone calls, but with emails and different things like that. If anything, I think, and I agree with what one of the guests was saying, that you don't necessarily have to have a vote. Now, things need to be coordinated, just like a body with moving parts. You have people at the grassroots, policy people. It's a whole body that needs to come together in order to see something succeed. I mean, with the Occupy movement, some aspects of certain states have been successful because they've been able to move forward from the grassroots, parking out, Twitter. You have Anonymous with their Twitter or online, and to be able to push what policies they want to a legislative level. It's the same thing with this aspect. It needs to be all these different things working together, as opposed to, oh, well, you have to have a vote or you won't be heard, or, oh, we're going to do this solely through social media. It has to be a combination. But I think the heat now, as opposed to, you know, in a way to put the heat and pressure on people, it's changed a little bit, and I think it gives the younger generation and people who are just up on technology in general an easier method to really press their delegates, press, you know, all these people who they want to be politically savvy or savvy to a generation to get those votes. All right, then let me press you on Twitter and put you to
task. I think we got the message. We're almost out of time. I think you have a very strong a point that we've covered on this program as well. I think I'm glad you brought that up. And there's a quick question here. We only have about 3 minutes to wrap up. And Jill Carter, Angela Janice from Advocates for Children and Youth wrote in, really wanting to know what is being done in the state legislature now. What are you doing to engage the process to stop the building of another jail?
Well, again, I've got a bill this session calling for a moratorium on the youth jail, the building of the youth jail, and for that capital budget to go to school construction in Baltimore City. And I will keep people posted that are interested in coming down. And I know we have limited time, but I've got to give a quick shout out to some of the people that have done that. And that is you, that is the Algebra Project, who I've said many times have done both in their wisdom. They've come to West Annapolis and they've done public protests. The Just Kids Partnership and, Heber Brown, and back at the beginning of this, Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. It takes people to come to Annapolis and advocate as well as to be there, because you know what? Believe it or not, you guys, there are actually legislators here who don't know what's going on and need you to come and tell them, okay?
Well, I believe that.
I believe it.
And let me say one quick point. Even though the jail has been delayed, the construction of the jail is delayed, the administration has not implemented one single program or one single one of the recommendations from the Justice Policy Institute report on this, or the Just Kids Partnership report years ago. And so that's pretty scary, because had they been beginning to implement some of these alternatives, we would actually be working toward having no need for a jail at all. So that's something that needs to be pushed as well.
And Jill Carter, that's something we've been pushing here for 19 years in the air. We'll continue to push on the air. And I want to thank you for being on this program today, Jill Carter, delegate from the 4th Third District, who's out there fighting the struggle and that battle in Annapolis for us. Good to have you on the air with us. Nicole Cheatham, it's always an honor to have you here. You've organized the Baltimore Algebra Project.
Thank you.
You've been struggling really hard and doing lots of great work in the community. And
yes,
it's always an honor to have you in our studio.
We're showing that youth have power.
And Dr. Lissa Spence, what can I say?
Ha, ha, don't say nothing.
Stare in the darkness. Get it right, guys. Stare in the darkness. And Umar Farooq, it's great to read what you wrote in The Nation. Thank you for being on the air with us today as well.
Thanks for the shout-out as well.
Thank you, Umar. And I want to remind you, coming up next is Wealthy Lifestyle with Deborah Owens. Her guests tonight are Stephen Labrossiere, whose book Finance and Romance, and meet Jennifer Matthews, Money in Your Pocket. Maria Hinojosa comes up later tonight with Latino USA, a great show. Fiesta Musical with Guillermo Brown. So it's a good night here on WEA's. Stay tuned to. I want to remind you as well, as we go out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. And the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Harrison. Our assistant producer is Cassandra Monsanto. Our interns today are Alex Pearson and Tiffany Means. We are engineered today by Regis Tucker. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cut. To this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And speaking of the web, let me just tell you right now, to find out more information about our topic today, which we'll link to, go to StopBaltimoreYouthJail.com. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.